Welcome back. It's another podcast and on a Sunday afternoon to boot. So excitingly, there'll be a roast dinner to enjoy shortly. And to enjoy it with me is my guest this week, Scouse pal, Suze Gilbert. Hello, Suze.
Hi, Ash.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Now, actually, that's my first question. So I refer to you as a Scouser there. Do you have to be from Liverpool to be a Scouser, or is the broader Merseyside area, does that count as well?
I mean, there's probably different politics on it, depending on where you're from, but I always thought, yeah, Scousers are Liverpool, and anything over the water, like the Wirral, right, not proper Scousers.
Okay.
Sorry if I've offended anyone. I've got family in the Wirral. I mean, I'm pretty sure most people would think that Crosby's too posh to be Scouse as well, but technically I've got an L postcode, so I go on postcode.
Do you have a purple bin? Isn't that one of the... I always thought that was one of the categories or criteria for being a Scouser.
No, but I mean, interestingly, or is it interesting, the history of the word Scouser actually, I think, comes from the Scandinavian.
Okay.
So it was like a dish that they used to cook on the ships, and then the sailors then brought it back to their hometowns, and when they lived in the ports, that's the dish they used to make, and it was called lebscouse. And that was the name of the dish, and it was a Scandinavian name for
it. And is this the same as pan of Scouse?
Yeah, Scousers, then they became the kind of people who lived in the dock area or worked on the ships became known as Scousers.
Right.
And it's just stuck.
Well, so that is interesting.
There you go.
Lovely little tangent to start things off. I like that. Thank you. So yeah, you brought me to your local, and actually I quite appreciate, really stuck to the letter of the law here. You can see your flat from the door.
Yeah,
it's probably about 20 yards away.
Exactly, yeah, this is as local as you can get other than living in or above a pub, I think.
Which is the dream, I think, for many.
Yeah, it is. It's great. No, yeah. It is.
Which pub have you brought us to?
I have brought you to the Hand of Glory.
Glory.
Yes, which is a great little pub. And as you say, very, very local. And when we moved in, one of the things we noticed when we looked around the flat is, amazing, look how close the pub is.
Yeah.
But then the second thought is it going to be a good local, or is it going to be, you know, stabby?
But I wouldn't say it's a stabby place.
No, it's definitely not.
It's in
the
former
we
category.
Came in, the day we moved in, we came in here for a drink, and we walked in, saw all the local beers, and it's all kind of local produce. Very friendly barman who advises about which beers to have, and we were like, yeah, we're set, this is great.
Yeah, it's very nice. And I mean, one of the notable things, I'm looking at the logo of the place here.
Yeah.
It's a hand, fingers outstretched, with what looks like flames coming from each of the fingers.
Flames, yeah.
Do you know anything about this? What is this all about?
I do, because we asked quite early on. It's pretty grim, so apologies
like
if anyone's eating while they're listening to this. But a Hands of Glory is a... it's a dead man's hand, and you would cut off the hand of a hanged man who'd been hanged for murder, usually.
Okay.
You would pickle and then dry it to preserve it, and then you would take some of the man's body fat and make candle wax out of it, and then put the candle into the hand and light it. And that was meant to have magical powers to render anyone who came within, you know, distance of it to be absolutely like frozen, I guess,
right,
a bit like a Medusa. They also thought it could open any door, so it has quite a mythical
skeleton
but
key.
Like, yeah, basically, literally, but pretty grim.
That's bizarre.
Interesting.
Why?
Choice.
Why the name of the pub? That's a really
no
weird
idea.
Choice.
They didn't know why. I mean, maybe the owner's just really into Wiccan and witchcraft. I mean, if you look at the decor, which I didn't really notice at first, and every time I come here, I notice something else. There you go, behind you. You've got tar burning. So there's a man with his hands on fire. There's some other kind of masts and paraphernalia.
What was the film the other year? Was it the Swedish one, the horror film from the summer? Was it Sommerfeld or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hate horror films, yeah, so I didn't watch it.
It looked terrifying. But yeah. It's got that sort of feel about it. There's lots of witchy stuff, all very medieval feel, isn't it? It's quite
interesting. But apparently all the artwork is from local, like, British artists who are just into that as a topic.
Right.
So it's a real eclectic mix. I'm not really sure what the cabinet of ammunition boxes has in relation to witchcraft. Maybe that they shot the witches. I don't know. Yeah, that's all ammo.
I thought there were boxes of matches, which I guess would link to the ammo thing.
Yeah,
but they're bullets.
Just, that's like your gun cabinet, just randomly mixed in. I mean, I think for anyone who hasn't been, it's still a nice, cosy feeling.
Despite everything we've said so far.
It's not an intimidating place to be.
No.
But, you know, you've definitely got some eye fodder on the walls. It's interesting.
Yeah, it keeps you entertained, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's always been called the Hand of Glory. The only thing I did see on their website is that actually this spot has held a liquor license since the 1800s. So always been a pub.
Nice.
But this used to be like farmers' fields.
All fields around here, wasn't it?
So yeah, so it's always been a pub.
What kind of they're quite big on the music here, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're part of the Jaguar Shoes collective.
Mm.
So there's this one, Jaguar Shoes, or Dream Bags and Jaguar Shoes, to give it its full title in Shoreditch. And then the Victoria on Queensbridge Road. So they're all part of the same group, but yeah, very into music, supporting artists. They've done a lot of campaigning over lockdown and a lot of initiatives to try and support the entertainment industry and struggling artists, because I wouldn't say like they get big names in, and they often have a lot of alternative stuff. But, you know, it's a real community for people in the area, and it was sad times. I mean, during lockdown, they had to have a crowdfunder to be able to open again, which I donated to.
Yeah.
So, but they were, they didn't have enough money to kind of get all the PPE and other things in place, so they couldn't just open on the kind of whim that people would come back, which is just, it's quite worrying. I worry that if there was another lockdown, if they would survive it, because it's a great pub, but it's probably not on a main thoroughfare for most people, so.
No, it's, it's on the corner of main roads, but it is a little bit off the beaten track.
I think because we're so close to like Dalston Junction and High Street, and that's a real like nightlife pub, why would you kind of walk off down a quieter road just see what's down there when you've got a plethora of bars there? But yeah, it's, and you know, one of their big draws is they have a late license, so they're open until after 1 a.m. I think on the weekends, and they would always have bands on or DJs. On a Sunday they used to have a jazz band. That was a real big part of it, so I think it got a lot of custom on the weekends. That was its main kind of business, and obviously now they can't do that, you know. So
it is worrying. And looking back to that period before lockdown, I think this was the last pub we were in.
Yeah, it was actually.
It all came crashing down.
This was our swan song.
Yeah, it was like a Friday evening or something.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming. We knew it was all going to be shut down. So we all sort of came in here. It was deserted because people were terrified at that stage. There was four or five of us. Each of us had a separate table.
Yeah.
Because
we weren't sure what the rules were then. Yeah.
And just enjoyed this sort of relatively somber pint.
Yeah. No, it was.
And
it was sad.
And you know, now we're on the eve of potentially another lockdown of sorts, maybe.
Yeah. Hopefully, we're not jinxing it.
Well, exactly.
I don't want to be a bad omen.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I suppose.
That was. Yeah. I did think about that, and I was like, wow. And then crazy to think that was back in March. And time has flown. You could also almost feel like we've got back to a bit of normality in the last few months. But as you say, we've chosen a day to come here when the headlines are saying Boris is going to announce something tomorrow.
God,
watch this space. So,
we've ruined it. Sorry, everyone. And I mean, I guess the other big thing about this place is the Sunday roasts.
Oh yeah.
So well, obviously it's Sunday today. So we're, you know,
we are
gearing up for one shortly.
We're nobly trying the roast as well. I mean, that was another thing when we moved in. They have a big chalkboard outside that says proper northern roast, and I was like, yes, this is it. And I know that I don't sound very northern anymore, but that's not through choice. That's just a byproduct of living with and marrying a southerner, I think. I was really intrigued, and it hasn't disappointed. It's, you know, we're in for a treat. I mean, hopefully the kitchen hasn't changed because I've built it up now.
Expecting great things.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that is a marker to me is when you finish your plate, it's still swimming in gravy, and that's what a proper roast should have. There should be excess gravy on the plate when you finish. If you're having to like scrape around that last potato,
yeah,
that's just not.
I think that's right. I think, I mean, look, as far as I'm concerned, you can't overdo anything on a roast plate. As long as there's enough of everything, I'm more or less happy.
Yeah.
But gravy is just critical.
I mean, gravy is key.
It's the moisture.
You know, I think it's a bit like, I'm very specific about a cup of tea as well. If someone makes a rubbish cup of tea, you know they're probably going to make weak gravy. And it's like, it's just, it goes
licked.
Hand in hand. Yeah. You know, your gravy, it should be opaque. You should be able to see through it.
Yeah, yeah.
It needs to really hold its own,
yeah.
But be plentiful as well. So yeah, and same with a cup of tea. You know, if someone serves you a cup of tea that's kind of grey in colour,
right.
It's like,
yeah. I mean,
I've known relationships to fail over bad cups of tea.
I can understand that. I mean, maybe it's the hangover talking, but all I'm thinking of now is just ordering a pint of gravy as my next beverage. Piping hot.
Yeah, maybe they should do that as their USP.
Yeah, well, it'd be slightly odd, but I'm down with it. Other pubs in the area then? I mean, obviously this is your local and,
yeah,
you know, one of your favourites. What are your other favourites in and around, you know, I guess the broader Hackney area?
Oh, I mean, we're spoiled for choice, aren't we? Like, Hackney is great for pubs. I mean, I've lived here a bit like your last guest, because we first lived together on and off for 13 years, and mainly in the East postcode.
Yeah.
I mean, another great one is just at the end of the road is the Pembury Tavern, which was another one where we went to when we first moved in, and we were like, are they welcoming us? Are they not? And actually it was fine, but it's a massive space and it didn't really have much atmosphere. And you know, whether you agree with it or not, I think the Five Points Brewery
has taken over it
in recent times, in the last 2 years or so, yeah. 2 or 3 years. And actually, you know, they've done a good job because they didn't renovate it and gentrify it. They basically just like rejigged the bar a bit,
yep,
and put Five Points on tap, and then did pizzas, and they are amazing pizzas. And they're like, you know, you can get one for £7,
yeah,
and I think that's, yeah, that's a solid staple. Just do something and do it well. Don't try and do too much. And they are pizza and beer, it's packed out now.
Yeah.
Like, we used to be able to wander in on any time, any day of the week, and get a table. And now, yeah, you struggle on a Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. Do they still have all the games there?
Yeah, they've got billiards.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah.
Because not the last time I was in there, but a few years ago, before Five Points got involved, it just seemed to be constant games.
Yeah,
and
they've
I played a game of chess, actually. Probably the first time I've ever played chess in a pub. And it was quite enjoyable.
Yeah.
It felt kind of highbrow for the first time ever. Really enjoy that. So it's good to know it's still game focused.
I mean, it's not like a games room because there's no door to it, but there's definitely still a games section, and that little area of off to the other side of the bar is still dedicated to games. It's kind of like the quiet area,
right.
You know, like the silent carriage on the train. It's like, if you're going to go in there, respect that people are playing games.
I get it. Yeah,
don't be too leery.
So what else are we talking about? Connect Four, I imagine.
I don't know. Yeah, there's a few board games. I mean, I was just amazed to see a billiards table. I mean, I've never learned how to play billiards,
no,
but I'm always just
looks
happy
good.
To see it.
Yeah.
It looks great, and you just smash some balls and see what happens.
Speaking of which, actually, not billiards, but
speaking of smashing balls,
moving seamlessly on. We were in a pub the other night, actually, the Yucatan, and that has two pool tables in. And I've not seen a pool table around here for ages.
No.
And that was a real exciting
yeah,
find.
Yeah, and not just like pool tables, but a dedicated room to the pool tables. Yeah, that was a nice little surprise. I mean, the whole of the Yucatan was a surprise because, I mean, in the whole time I've lived in this area, I've walked past and thought, not sure.
Yeah.
But it was great.
It's really nice. Music was great.
The soundtrack was great. I mean, the fact that, I mean, I was probably there. You left at some point, I say. But the fact that I was there probably 3 hours, they did play probably every N People hit over the time. And I was like, I can't remember the last time that happened. So,
I mean, when you say every N People hit, you've got
three.
Moving On Up.
Yeah.
Ichiku Park, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Well, is that a little too off the beaten track for?
Search for the Hero.
Of course, wonderful.
One Night in Heaven, that's it.
Oh.
Yeah, they all came on with it.
I think they were slightly underrated, you know, N People.
I mean, yeah.
Those are solid pop bangers.
And in between there was some like solid 80s, solid 90s, some great dance tracks. I was very, very pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I could happily while away hours playing pool, listening to some great
people. And I guess other music pubs, because you're very much into your gigs. I mean, obviously not this year,
but
where else, you know, pub wise do you head for if you're looking for something to listen to, or perhaps even a dance?
A dance. Well, obviously, like, you know, I said, our local was great because you could come in here and see. I mean, sometimes a bit questionable. One time there was a DJ on a Sunday that mixed in what sounded like whale music, and they were like, no, you've lost your audience,
yeah,
mate. But they're, you know, good credit to them, they try everything. I mean, for me, I don't know that Jono discussed this on a previous podcast as well, and there are a few that are actually known kind of almost like clubs that are in pubs,
yeah.
But the Old Queen's Head. I was going to say Queen of Hoxton. I was like, no, the Old Queen's Head on Essex Road, to me, that was my first experience in London of pubs that were actual music pubs. But like, you would get good DJs playing there. Like, you had to buy a ticket. That was a new thing for me, that you bought tickets to pubs. We went there for the New Year's Day rave one time, and that's quite famed. It was an interesting experience. Because actually where they usually have the gigs is the upstairs, and it's the smallest room that you've seen. So very sweaty.
Yeah.
No social distancing would be possible in that arena. But I've had some very fun nights there.
I've not been there for years. I've no idea if it's still any good.
Yeah, I think the problem is that then it gets that like reputation on a Friday and Saturday, then there would just be, you know, chancers who come in and just like, and there was always a queue outside. So it'd be like, are you on the guest list? It got a bit like elitist. And I would say probably more times than I've been in to see a gig or a DJ there, I've actually ended up in the King's Heads, I think it is, over the road, you inevitably get knocked back or you see the queues too long and you go there.
That's the overspill joint.
Which also has a good music scene, but it's more like, you know, Bee Gees, cover bands, karaoke.
Time and place.
But it, you know, it was always a very inviting place, and there's been some pretty loose evenings there, so good as well. But I mean, I'm a bit embarrassed to say that my biggest experience of music venues, or music pubs, are probably more associated with like late night dive bar vibes than credible music venues.
There's nothing to be ashamed of there.
and that's probably where I've spent more of my time and seen more music in pubs than, you know, cool gigs. I mean, when the first place I lived in East London, there was a lot of time spent in the Dolphin on Mare Street, and I don't know if anyone's been there. I mean, it is technically a pub, it's open in the day, I've seen it.
It is open in the day.
Can't say I've ever been there in the daytime.
I have, slightly embarrassingly.
Oh, really? How was it?
I mean, it smelt like you'd expect the Dolphin to smell in the day.
In the day, yeah.
So that sort of heady mix of bleach and
sick
various body of liquids. I mean, like, it's a late night place, isn't it?
I mean,
where you just can't
I've
say no and
a,
you want to continue the pub vibe.
Yeah, Yeah, and I've always had a soft spot for it. I know some people turn their nose up, but I'm like, it is what it is. It doesn't try to claim to be something else. And I've had excellent nights there. There was, you know, always good music. Well, you know, there was music. There was a good sing-along, you're drunk. They were always very friendly. It wasn't too taggy. Yeah. And you could always guarantee get in there.
I went there on a Valentine's night once. This was back when I was single.
As a date, I was going to say. Yeah. That.
Surprise, we're going to the Dolphin. No, it was me and a friend. We were both single. And you can imagine what it was like on a Valentine's night in the Dolphin. But I just really sticks in my mind. They had a corner of the pub, which they sort of half sectioned off and tried to make it a bit of a sort of romantic area. And as you enter that area, there was a sign above it saying, "Welcome to the erection section." That's
exactly
what we're dealing with, I think.
That's what you get at the Dolphin. I love it because, you know, they know their clientele. They know they're not trying to pretend to be anything else. There's no gastro pub there, is there?
No.
They're like, this is where... It was where you went to pick up if you were single and you hadn't struck out in every other place.
The last roll of the dice.
Yeah, it was the last chance saloon. Thinking which another last chance saloon dive bar probably has a bit more of a credible reputation with music than the Dolphin is the Lexington in King's Cross.
Yes.
And I struck out previously and then went to the Lexington and hit the jackpot and met my now husband there.
Oh, all net. Wonderful.
So, what greater accolade than that?
Yeah.
Go there, you will find a husband.
Give them a picture of your wedding day or something for them to hang behind the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of,
this could be
you.
See
what you could win.
This could be you, yeah. But that's another place that's like, it's just great. And actually, have you been there for our good friend T-Day's gig, Tom Hickox,
yes.
Who's also featured.
He was the inaugural guest on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, of course, yeah. You know, start with the high calibre.
And just go down.
And then it just goes downhill from there. But yeah, we've been to see his gigs there. So as I say, they have a more credible reputation for music. But, you know, Friday, Saturday night, it also has the late night vibe.
Yeah.
And actually, it was Kate and Will's wedding. We had the extra bank holiday and everyone lost their minds because we had, I think we had the Easter weekend followed by another 4-day weekend. And it was just like heaven.
I think I'm still recovering from that.
Yeah, I think we actually, well, you didn't make it because we'd been at various street parties and then you hosted the after street party and didn't make it to Lexington.
No.
So you did not get to witness the
momentous
the union
event.
Yes, yeah. But
the union was there, was it? In the erection section.
I'm quite happy with a dive bar. Actually, as my husband Paul reminded me, on one of our first dates, he took me to Slim Jim's.
Slim Jim's.
Which is yet another kind of institution.
Up the street, Islington.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really, it's a cool bar, actually. I really like
it. Doesn't it have, I hope I'm not misremembering this because we had quite a lot of margaritas when we were there, but I'm pretty sure there's bras hanging from the ceiling.
Ooh. That's a good question. Don't really remember.
I think so. It's very like, it's got that kind of American rock bar, roadhouse kind
it's
of vibe.
Authentic, I think.
And in the authenticity, it's, you know, because like you'd either have like dollar bills or currency on the wall or bras. That seems to be, or beer mats.
It's the dumb thing.
I think the British version is beer mats.
Yeah.
And the American one is bras or dollars.
Dollars, yeah. Yeah, I've not been there for ages. The last time I went, actually. I mean, it's unfair to blame Slim Jim's for this, but I left and someone, in an unprovoked attack, punched me to the ground.
Oh.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of chipped teeth as a result of that incident.
Really? Were you visiting London, or was this when you moved to London?
I'd recently moved.
Oh, God. Questioned all your life choices.
Yeah, immediately looking at train tickets back up north. But yeah, that was the last time. But as I say, nothing to do with the good people of Slim Jim's.
Yeah.
So, on Merseyside, where, growing up, where were your favourites? What are your favourites now? Where should people go to?
I mean, I think, like... I don't think I appreciated how lucky I was growing up in Liverpool and having the pub and bar scene we did until I moved away.
Yeah.
Because like the pub was really like everything. Yeah. Like it was your whole social hub. And anyone who lived, I mean, not even just in the Crosby area, but people used to travel from afar to come to the George Tavern. And I wouldn't say it's like, oh yeah, it's great to go to Euro's pub, but as a 16, 17 year old, it was the place to be and it was the meeting point. And you know, weirdly it's like, well, they all know you because they know your parents, so they kind of know what age you are. But you know, everyone turned a blind eye those days, as long as you weren't causing trouble.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to be of a decent height and had also the token taller friend who, if in doubt on a night where the bouncers were being a bit like more strict, could always get us in.
Just usher them to the front.
And it's just so much easier for girls. You just like put a bit of makeup on, put some high heels on. It's not so easy.
Low-cut
for boys.
Top.
Yeah.
I get it.
Well,
I
mean, no, I didn't pimp myself out to get in.
I mean, that's quite a leap from low-cut top to prostitution.
Yeah. But you know, speaking of which, I think the thing, not prostitution.
Where are you going?
But the attire.
Yes.
I also didn't realise until I moved away from Liverpool that you don't really, like, most other people didn't treat the pub like it was a night out.
No.
So they didn't dress for it. But for us, yeah, it didn't matter that it was a pub. It didn't matter if it was a Yatesy's or whatever, or, you know, a Harvester. If that was your meeting point in Liverpool, you would, like, there'd be a 3-hour ritual, you know, fake tan, hair, shoes, and then, you know, always a dress or some kind of sparkly top. You really went out. You really went for it. And
it's very noticeable, actually, in Liverpool. There's that unique just approach to dressing up.
Yeah, like, and even now, like, it has got, you know, it has softened a little bit, and especially, like, but even now, like, you know, it's very normal for my friends or even my brother's friends who are in their 40s and we're in our 30s now. Like, if you're going on a night out to meet your friends, even if you are just meeting at the pub, it's still fine to go and get a blow dry and buy a new top. That's absolutely acceptable. In London, I think people would look at me like I had two heads.
Maybe in West London people do that.
Yeah, maybe.
But not then, around here.
Yeah. And then when I, you know, left Liverpool, the safety of Liverpool for the first time, we went to Sheffield and we were having a pub crawl in our freshers week, and I, you know, was like, great, pub crawl. Spent the obligatory 3 hours getting ready, which my housemates got used to and would always then later tell me the wrong time because they would never be ready on time. And I, you know, tottered down the stairs of our shared house in my sequin boot tube and stilettos.
Good luck.
And they were all wearing cargo pants and vest tops and were like, what the hell are you wearing? So yeah, that was a bit of a shock to the system.
Real clash of styles.
But yeah, the George Tavern, anyone listening to this who's from, you know, that kind of area will know it from that era. That's where everyone met. It was just, it was the hub. I mean, it was first loves, first everything. I mean, I think I met my first two proper boyfriends in that pub, and probably also had our first dates and breakups in the same pub. It was, you know, it was a hot spot.
Yeah, sounds like the Queen Vic.
It literally was. Yeah, there's so many dramas that went down. Also, my first tequila shot didn't go down so well. But yeah, that's the one that sticks in the memory.
Okay.
But that's because it's like my formative years. That's where I went. In terms of pubs that I would actually recommend to go unless you're 17, the Crow's Nest in Crosby is one of those institutions that it was my dad's favourite pub. And it was, you know, you had the crowd there who were like my dad, who would just be the people who just of a certain age who were happy to just turn up on their own and just sip a quiet pint.
Yep.
And just chat to whoever was there. Some of them had their own tankards behind the bar, and I like that.
Own tankards?
Yeah.
That's a lovely touch, isn't it?
It also had two entrances. It still had the bar split from back in the day when I think there was one section that women weren't allowed into. Thankfully, it's much more woke these days, and it's free to everyone. But they've kept the divided sections.
Yeah, I quite like that, actually. There's that little nod to the past. Like, a lot of a bunch of places in town, like the Sam Smith's pubs, they still have all those.
The Saloon or the Snug, yeah, exactly. They still name that. Yeah. They have the frosted glass little dividers, which actually in a COVID world,
ideal.
I mean, ideal, yeah.
Everything comes back around in fashion.
That is, yeah, that's the other pub. It's just, yeah. I remember there was like a certain age I had to get to before my dad would like take me to the Crow's Nest because, you know, it's respectable. But okay. It's like, you don't want these 17-year-olds coming in their boot juice, you know, that's not what it's about. But the thing is, we still go there now and it's got a real community about it. I know a lot of people where it's part of their like Christmas Day tradition to go there for a pint. And there's like, where we live, we're very lucky that it's a very sociable area and the pubs and the restaurants very much part of that. But as I said, Liverpool spoiled choice because the pub was always the precursor to the night out. And I didn't realise that until I went away that other people didn't just go out into like an amazing town with all these great late night bars and then go to see world renowned DJs Cream and Bunker. And we went to like Garlands, and these are all places that people would travel to come to.
Yeah, of course.
And that was just, as a 17, 18 year old, that was just standard. That was like my local.
You take it for granted, don't you, a little bit.
I was really, really sports choice. I mean, Liverpool's got a great nightlife scene.
It's really good. But most of the pubs I go to are football related.
Yeah.
So going up to watch Liverpool, Premier League Champions 2020.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's just throw that one in there. So, I mean, the one I have to just call out is actually your brother took me there for the first time.
Yeah,
the halfway house.
Yes.
Which is, I suppose, halfway between the ground and town.
It does what it says on the tin.
It really does. And, I think Island Bar. But, yeah, well, that's irrelevant. Basically, you go there for a sing-song after the game. And it's rammed, everyone's screaming their heads off.
Jamie
Webster on the guitar.
I mean, it's just such a good atmosphere.
Amazing atmosphere.
And, you know, drinks have stayed cheap. They haven't tried to cash in on tourists.
Yeah.
It's just, it is what it is. It's like bog standard. It looks like a kind of working men's club room with a bar in the middle.
Yeah.
Good screens, good music. But yeah, you go there for the banter.
I mean, I've no idea what it's like the rest of the time, but
I mean,
for the sing song after the game.
Yeah.
Unbeatable.
And then the 12th, is it the 12th man you're on?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's loads of those pubs round the ground. Everyone's sort of got their favourite that they go to
pre
or post-match.
I know, but obviously, as you say, because that's from my brother, who's a diehard who has, you know, initiated all of you travellers. Well, you know.
I'm sure that's the right term.
Out-of-towners, but still dedicated football fans.
Yeah.
Not tourists. I was trying not to say tourists, because you're not a tourist. You're not a fair weather supporter.
I've done my time, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
With
season ticket holder, so that is your badge of honour now.
It is. So it's all been very positive so far. Let's get the negative hat on.
Okay.
Pet peeves. What do you not like about pubs?
Very little. I would say I'm a pretty easygoing pub goer, but as I get older, seating. Not ample seating, or, you know, illogical seating, where there's lots of space but not good seats, or like, you know, big massive tables that, you know, people will be like, well, I put the table, but they're so wide that you can't actually hear the person talking on the other side, and no one's ever going to fill that whole table, but it just takes up an offensive amount of room.
So it's sort of a design piece,
yeah,
I suppose.
It is, yeah, exactly. And I these days, I do like to know that I can have a seat and I have a sit
right. Rest those weary limbs.
Exactly, you know. And the other one, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I don't have the loudest voice. And it seems to be set at some kind of like frequency where any slight background noise mixed with a bad acoustic means that anyone even sat next to me would not be able to hear me. And you know, that creates a strain. And I think anywhere where you're struggling to kind of maintain the conversation because of either the acoustics or the levels of the background music, it's like, no, but you're not in a club. And unless it is like, you know,
the old Queen's Head.
Unless it is the Queen's Head and you've gone and you're paying for the music, fine. But otherwise, pubs, like, no, you need to think about that. You need to think about that atmosphere. You need to make it, you know, supportive of a relaxed general chit-chat.
Yeah. It's hard, though, isn't it? Because everyone's level of what is too much or what is acceptable is different.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. And just having a sort of awareness that you want to create the best atmosphere, and just try and work with it and experiment until you get it right, I suppose.
Yeah. But that's about it. And I know everyone else's pet peeve is toilets. But to be honest, I think once you've been to Glastonbury as many times as I have, you're just like, fine, just, you know, get on with it.
Okay. Unique peeves, I like that. And then, I guess, flipping back. So you mentioned you like the sort of community feel of a lot of pubs.
Yeah.
Is that your sort of key criteria for a good pub? Is it that sort of community friendliness, or what is it that makes a good pub for you?
I think when it's a obviously, you know, if I have good seating and good acoustics, but yeah, I think that kind of, like, you know, we've talked a lot about bar staff and their attitudes, but also I think then, and you know, your last one was really interesting to hear the insights of someone who works behind the bar, and
yeah.
I was like, yeah, I didn't think about it that way. You could just, like, someone could be having a bad day and you come in and you're slightly rude with your order, and that could really send them under. And actually, but I think it's a two-way thing, and if you have the friendly bar staff, to me, I will, that might lift my mood. Like, when I came in here and, you know, I just had a really enthusiastic bartender who will make, you know, that could get me to try a different drink or to try something else, and it makes me come back. So I think that is,
that's it, it puts you in a better mood and just more amenable to the whole pub, the whole experience.
And I think as well, it's like, whatever they're doing, do it well. As I said, like, the Penry Tavern has just gone pizzas and they've nailed it. Here does roast and they've nailed it. So just don't try to do too much. The one thing that I'm disappointed about in this one is they used to do curly fries on the menu, and they, for some inexplicable reason, they've dropped it. And that's why, I would say anywhere that does curly fries gets my vote, because, like, who doesn't love a curly fry?
Very niche, very good. Let's assume you owned a pub.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the curly fries on the menu, check. Loads of gravy, check. What else? What's your USP at that point?
So, obviously on the music theme, I think if I could create it, like, the best jukebox in the world that would have every song you could think of, and it was free, and, you know, obviously you need a late license to make sure people keep playing, but I think a combination of music and potato-based snacks, like, you know,
Spotify and Spuds.
There we go. That's it. We've done it. That's our marketing. I can't think of anything better.
Well, on that note, let's get some gravy. Let's see if they can rustle up some curly fries. Thank you very much, Suze, for joining me. Thank you to Glory for hosting us. And we'll see you soon.